All right, welcome aboard. Hope everybody had a good Christmas holiday. And yes, I did. Did I get everything that I wanted? Well, not everything. There are a couple Star Wars action figures that they didn't get for me. So, something about I'm too old now to play with toys. I don't know. How'd yours go, Mr. Shook?
Pretty good. Pretty good. All the family stuff. Yeah, you know, you get to our age and there's just not a lot of receiving in gifts, but, you know, got the niece and all the other little cousins. So it's all about the kids these days, unfortunately. But, yeah, it's nice to see everyone get their gifts. And, of course, the highlight of the holiday season, other than the quick lane bowl, is just to be able to spend some time with your loved ones, of course. And I was able to do that, so very thankful.
Very good. Let's start with the quick lane bowl because I know that's where you're going to be. Tonight. I've been to a few under the various names that it has had down there at Ford Field. And actually before that, when they used to play out at the Silver Dome, too.
Yeah, Randy Moss.
Yeah.
The bowl game before the Motor City Bowl, I believe, for a time. The Pizza Bowl for a time as well.
And there have been the odd good game. But in general, there's not tons of interest unless a team like CMU goes there, or in this case, Eastern Michigan will be there, and they're kind of a nice story because they don't really have a winning tradition of football at Eastern, but the Eagles are kind of recovering and getting better these days.
Yeah, I definitely feel good for my friends who are Eastern Michigan grads or you know, fans of the Eagles, because like you said, they don't have the tradition of a Western Michigan and a Central Michigan. Not that those teams have been world beaters other than a couple of short you know, stints for both of them over these past 20 years or so. But, yeah, it's cool. It's cool for Eastern Michigan, and Western Michigan has played MAC championship games at Ford Field. Central just played the MAC championship game at Ford Field a few weeks ago. Central's been in that bowl before as well. So, yeah, it'll be cool for Eastern to get their chance. And I would anticipate a decent turnout. You know, obviously everyone who went to Eastern is pretty much from Southeast Michigan for the most part. It's a commuter school of sorts. And I know they're probably hating me saying that, but that's kind of one of the qualities of Eastern. And I think that a lot of people will turn out because, like I said, it's the first time they're in one of these Ford Field games. It should be a fun atmosphere.
You know, they haven't won a bowl game since 1987 when they upset San Jose State in the California Bowl. And, yes, I had to look that.
Forget.
I had
who
to look
forget.
That up. Yeah. However, over the last three seasons, they've beaten three Big Ten teams. Now, mind you, not powerhouse teams, but when Illinois, Purdue, and Rutgers put EMU on their schedule, they were planning on winning that game, and they didn't.
Yeah, the best part about that is not only do you get the nice win, kind of your season-defining win in some ways, but then you walk out of there with a check as well. You get the money from the team that gets to play you, and that's always a good thing. So, yeah, Chris Creighton is the name of the coach. He's been there, I think this is year six for him right now, like you said. Three out of the past four seasons have ended in a bowl game. So pretty exciting for the Eagles. But like you said, 1987 was the last time they got the win in the bowl game. So if they can do this, you know, there's a difference between getting to where Eastern's at right now, which is a respectable program, a middle-of-the-road MAC program that goes to more bowl games than not. Nothing wrong with that. But if you want to fool around and mess with the Bowling Greens of the world, the Toledos of the world, kind of the Buffaloes of the world, which become the powerhouses of the MAC as of late. Western had their little stint as well. If you want to get up to that level, you got to win all these MAC games more consistently, get to Ford Field, the MAC championship, and then maybe Chris Creighton gets that look of a Power 5 type of job, because the trajectory he's going, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets kind of a lower-edge Power 5 job, and maybe he can even boost his profile even more if he keeps building that thing in its lane.
All right. They play Pitt tonight. Early on, the bowl prognosticators were thinking Pitt might be the opponent for Michigan State, but instead they'll get Wake Forest tomorrow in the Pinstripe Bowl. Thoughts on this one?
Yeah, these games are always interesting because it's two teams, you know, a six-loss team and a five-loss team, disappointing seasons. You know, Wake Forest are a powerhouse, so maybe not as disappointing for them as it was with higher expectations in East Lansing. So it's kind of sometimes about which teams are playing for something, which teams have the motivations. Now, we know that Michigan State, all their guys are playing. There's some guys that will play in the NFL in this roster in some way, shape, or form down the line. And I even saw a report today from the press conference that Darrell Stewart might be coming in and playing at receiver form. So they can get him back. You know, obviously, that's their biggest offensive weapon throughout most of the year. So you get him back, and then Brian Lewerke kind of puts things together in his swan song. Maybe we'll see some of the young quarterbacks a little bit at times you'd think that at least Rocky Lombardi and Theo gets a little bit of a look there as well. So, you know, a lot of and obviously finishing on a winning record and getting some momentum going for Mark D'Antonio going forward could be a good thing for Michigan State. I think they're going to win. I like their chances. You know, Wake Forest comes out of the ACC. It's not a team that's really much hyped, and it's not a conference that's much hyped right now either. So I think it's kind of a toss-up game, but I would pick the Spartans to win.
All right, let's backpedal a bit, and this one may hurt. But the New Mexico Bowl did not go well for the Chips.
Yeah, that's to say the least. They were out of it early, and they got scored on often in that one. But, you know, it's not to be unexpected. I don't think Central Michigan was a very good team this year. I was at the MAC championship game and saw them there. But for Jim McElwain to go from one win to even getting into the MAC championship game to even getting into the New Mexico Bowl, it's a good thing for that program. So certainly a successful season for them and one that they can build upon as a program that, you know, Jim McElwain just in and of himself is going to be a good recruiting tool, not just for the high school kids around the Midwest, but some of these graduate transfers. That was the quarterback this year that they had, Quentin Dormady comes over as a grad transfer. So you think that maybe some of those kind of guys would keep coming, especially if Jim McElwain's maybe perceived to be a little bit of a short timer as a coach. I mean, I don't know if he lasts in Mount Pleasant more towards another year or two, because you would think that Power Fives might start come calling again once again for him with the experience at Colorado State with the success he had there, and even a little bit of success he had at Florida, although that was a short stint that he had in Gainesville. So, I think Central's on the right path too. It's, you know, it's nice to have all five teams in the state playing in bowls this holiday season. Of course, you don't feel great about any of the programs right now, but certainly better than we feel better about our pro sports teams these days.
Well, Michigan's got the best chance to make us forget about their season if they go and beat Alabama.
Absolutely. Like you said, it's Alabama. I mean, they might be down a half step from where they usually are this time of year, but anytime you can go toe-to-toe with Nick Saban and beat an Alabama team in a national televised game that everyone's going to be watching on New Year's Day in the Citrus Bowl, I think that's a big thing. So, yeah, if you want to say that, you know, the doubters are lining up saying even if Jim Harbaugh gets this win, you beat a down Alabama team? I don't believe that at all. I mean, anytime that Michigan can continue winning a few big games here and there, we know that was kind of the rap against Harbaugh, and continues to be, obviously, with Ohio State. But they got a couple of nice wins this year and really can get some momentum going into the offseason if they can beat the program, which has been the standard, you know, for the past 10 years. So if they can do that, that would be big for the program, in my opinion. And that will be certainly interesting to see how they stack up.
Matt Shook is with us for his weekly visit. Kind of sticking with football, I guess.
Yeah, in a way.
Let's talk about the Lions. Sunday they wrap it up against the Green Bay Packers. Coming into the season, a lot of talk about the run game. Just going to throw some numbers out there, and then you can give your thoughts on all this. And I realize that the big thing here is Kerryon Johnson did suffer an injury. But 14 different players have rushed the ball for the Lions this season. Johnson's their leading rusher with 350 yards, followed by Bo Scarborough, who only got here not that long ago, 335 yards. Four players have scored a touchdown rushing, just six rushing touchdowns, and two of them came last week when Wes Hills made his NFL debut and rushed for a whopping 21 yards but got into the end zone twice for the Lions. Where is this run attack? Because these are not good numbers.
Yeah, it's been such a big problem for this franchise for such a long time. I mean, if you want to be positive, the good news is there's been like a half here and there where it's looked pretty good. Even a game here and there at times against some bad teams where Scarborough had a good game. And like you said, they've were getting, you know, Wes Hill's gotten to the end zone twice. I know it's a bad Washington team that he got into there again. But like I said, as opposed to the fact where you're never getting a 100-yard rusher, you got some more of that this year. Bo Scarborough was right up against 100 a couple times consecutive weeks as well. And Kerryon put up some pretty good numbers when he was healthy last year as well. So I think it's going in a positive direction. Obviously, it's not near where it needs to be. I think Joe Dahl is someone who, for the value of his contract, is someone who you got to believe will be starter at guard next year as well, given that he's locked up for a little bit of a longer term. The big question is Graham Glasgow. He's a free agent after this season. There was a lot of speculation during training camp that they would re-sign him and extend him. past his rookie contract, but that has not happened. So it's possible that Graham Glasgow could be playing in his last game as a Detroit Lion on Sunday, which is something that I don't think a lot of people would have expected back in the summer when he was coming off a pretty good season. He has that versatility as a center and a guard, which is something that the Lions and Matt Patricia always talk about, something that they wanted. He's a Michigan, University of Michigan guy, so obviously someone that has some roots in the community, as someone who wants to be here. So that's been a bit of a mystery, and maybe as much as you want to watch guards and that kind of thing, you might want to keep an eye on him on Sunday, because obviously everyone else is pretty much banged up on the offensive line at this point.
Yeah, you know, my next question was going to be free agency, and I was going to give you five names, and that he was one of the names on the list. So I'll give you the other four. Who do they have to sign and who's not coming back? Danny Amendola, Logan Thomas, A'shaun Robinson, and Tavon Wilson.
And I don't love any of those names. Obviously, Amendola has been very productive, but he's 35 years old right now, so you don't know how much he's going to cost, plus how durable he's going to be, and you might want to get some young blood into the receiving room. A guy that I think is kind of maybe more important than he appears to someone who just watches the game on Sundays is Tavon Wilson, just because he's become a leader back there. And you got Will Harris, who's so young. You got the cornerbacks, including Oruwariye, who are so young. So I think that leadership in the back group there might be important. Now, if you want Tavon Wilson to be a starter in week one, you probably don't. In fact, if you want to be a pretty good defense, you almost certainly don't. But for a cheap contract, to bring a guy back who's got a lot of special teams experience and some good leadership experience, he's been kind of a mouthpiece for the defense during all these trying times every Monday when he's got to explain why the defense is so bad. I think he's a guy who's a little bit more valuable than he might appear if you just watch the games.
If Jermaine Kearse didn't get his injury, does Amendola even play in Detroit this year?
Yeah, that's kind of my point, is that there's guys out there that you can pick up, and obviously Kearse has the big injury and never even plays this season. But there's going to be veteran wide receivers that are out there. Now, Matt Patricia has an affinity for Danny Amendola and vice versa. He's one of those guys that meshes well with Matt Patricia. We know that some guys don't. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him come back, but certainly Amendola has played his way into another decent one-year contract somewhere around the NFL. And the fact that you've got very productive Marvin Jones, a very productive Kenny Galladay, and holes all over this entire roster might lead to me to believe that he might be a guy that you let walk, whereas you kind of hold on to some guys like A'shaun Robinson, who have been, you know, pretty productive at times, albeit for a defense that's really struggled as a whole. But you don't want to lose any more bodies than you have to for that defense.
Jeez, what are they going to get for Slay?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, he's an above-average player, and he's, you know, the low end of the number one cornerbacks around the NFL. So you got to believe that if they're going to trade him, which is kind of what we hear is likely going to happen, and what we've seen happens from guys who maybe have a little bit too much of a personality, so to speak, for the Matt Patricia era. So, I mean, you know, is he worth a first-round pick? I don't know about that, especially when he wants to get paid and he's got the holdout during minicamp this year. But something a little bit lower than that in terms of value could be something you would net for him, and I would think that the Lions and Bob Quinn would jump at the chance to make that happen.
All right, Pistons are playing the Wizards tonight. We'll have the game for you right here on WPHM starting at 6:35. No Luke Kennard. How serious an injury, and can they get any more injuries? Who else can get hurt on this team?
Yeah, some bad news today. Luke Kennard sounds like he's going to be out at least 2 weeks, and they're going to take a look at him on January 7th, which, of course, one of the young players, one of the exciting players, one of the guys who can fill it up scoring-wise and do other things offensively as well. So bad news for the Pistons in a season of bad news injury-wise. Of course, we don't give them a complete free pass on injuries because you knew this roster could have these kinds of issues coming into this season. So, yeah, Luke Kennard, and not only that, but it's knee tendonitis, which is something that seems to linger throughout careers, and it's both knees. It's not just one knee. He's got knee tendonitis in both knees. So that's a bad sign for the Pistons. I have kind of advocated shopping around Luke Kennard a little bit, not because he's a bad player, but because he might have some value. And if you're a team that's rebuilding, giving someone a nice extension after next season might not fit in the timeline over these next 2, 3, 4 years that you might want to be working with. So maybe the knee tendonitis in both knees kind of takes that possibility off the table. And but most importantly for the Pistons, you got to get him right, give him some chance to get back. I don't know if the Pistons will be playing well right now, if maybe he'd play through it, but certainly not a good thing to have one of your young cornerstones out for 2 weeks as you're struggling in a five-game losing streak right now anyways.
Yeah, and if the legs go, the jump shot goes, and that's his game there. All right, tell them about the podcast.
Yeah, Locked On Pistons podcast. We're going to get one more episode out tomorrow. We'll have another disjointed holiday week with two or three episodes next week, and then back at it in 2020, talking Pistons. Obviously,
we lost Matt there. I'm sorry about that. He was wrapping things up, and we lost Matt Shook. Ah, sorry about that, Matt. Anyways, check out Matt's podcast, Locked On Pistons. You know the routine. We're going to take a break here, and then we'll be back with more of the Dennis Stuckey Show in just a moment on WPHM. Don't go away. We're going until 6:30 tonight, and then it's Pistons basketball here on WPHM.